The Occupy anniversary, is it a celebration or a commiseration? From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for Monday, September 17th. Coming up, a fresh China trade dispute, and General Motors is anxious to shed the Government Motors nickname sooner rather than later. But first, 1 year ago, protesters kicked off an extended encampment calling for reform on Wall Street. And today they are back to mark the occasion. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith is at Zuccotti Park, the heart of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Good morning, Stacey.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. So is this a party or a funeral? What's the vibe down there this morning?
Well, there's been a lot of action, a lot of movement, parts of the movement going in different directions to block off different buildings. The idea was basically to spread out two different buildings in the Wall Street area and sit down in front of them to block business as usual. I have to say, I was here a year ago, and it is a much smaller scale protest this time around. It just feels much mellower. The numbers are smaller. The occupiers were saying 2,000 people showed up, but to me, it has looked like less than that.
I know you've been speaking to folks who came out for the anniversary. What do they have to say?
Yes, well, I asked them, just because the numbers did seem a little lower, if they felt like the movement was successful or how they felt about being there that day. And I spoke with Joseph Califano. He's an economics undergraduate student at Sarah Lawrence. And he actually wasn't out last year, but he came out this year. He said he felt it was really important to be there this time around supporting the movement.
People wouldn't be out here if they weren't feeling pain. People wouldn't be out here if there wasn't a real problem. And I'm just out here to make sure everyone knows that we have some work to do and that, you know, everything isn't peachy keen.
So, Jeff, everyone I've spoken with so far has been very optimistic. A lot of people saying that this time around, although the numbers are smaller, the people believe in the cause more, and it's not maybe the happening that it was before, but it's maybe a more devoted group.
Do they feel like they've achieved anything?
I asked that a lot, and everybody to the person said yes. And I think they feel like they changed the conversation in a fundamental way. And coming up on the presidential election, everybody talked about the presidential election and how occupiers contributed to that conversation and some of the issues that we're seeing coming up in the debate.
Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith in New York. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, so what do some of the non-occupiers on Wall Street think of what the movement accomplished? Well, our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore asked them.
Occupy Wall Street never really developed a single cause, but in the mind of many, the movement did take aim at a single target.
We had Wall Street bankers take other people's money and gamble with it, bring our economy to its knees. Are you okay with that?
It turns out a lot of people weren't okay with that, even on Wall Street. John Taft is the CEO of RBC Wealth Management, which manages $500 billion on behalf of rich clients.
I found Occupy Wall Street to be an educational moment for me. It was a shot across the bow.
Taft wrote a book this year urging Wall Street executives to abandon greed in favor of serving their clients.
Occupy Wall Street was just a harbinger of much more serious social unrest we could experience if we don't address the whole issue of income inequality.
Barry Ritholtz is the CEO of the financial research firm Fusion IQ and a popular blogger. He's wanted Wall Street to change for a long time.
I had my little Occupy Wall Street banner up on the blog for a couple of weeks.
But he took it down because he was disappointed that the movement didn't deliver.
Man, you guys had a real potential to impact change, to really affect things, and you blew it. I'm sorry if you don't want to hear that, but that's just the reality.
It's the criticism you would expect from Wall Street types. The occupiers didn't have enough ambition. That said, people on Wall Street acknowledge something is broken.
I don't think anybody's happy with the system, including the people who were in these banks.
Herb Allison is the former CEO of Merrill Lynch and helped the government with the bailouts like TARP and Fannie Mae. He says changing the system requires more political will because
greed will always be with us. There's greed in all sectors of society.
He's pushing for a breakup of big banks like the one he used to work for. That's one cause Occupy Wall Street would have been happy to support. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
So how is Wall Street today, you know, numbers-wise? Not so good. The Dow Jones Index of the total U.S. stock market is down about 0.25%. Stocks seem headed for a lower close across Europe as well. And after rising last week, oil prices continue to bubble upward today.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
At a campaign stop in Ohio today, President Obama plans to launch a new trade complaint against China. The administration will file a grievance with the World Trade Organization, saying China unfairly subsidizes exports of car parts. Here's Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmidt.
Ohio sells a lot of auto parts. The industry makes up more than 10% of all jobs in the state. But the number of auto parts jobs has been cut in half over the past decade. President Obama is pointing his finger at China. The country's given $1 billion in subsidies the past couple of years for the export of cars and car parts.
What's surprising is the timing. This has been happening now for many years. Why now? Why in Ohio?
Could it be politics? That's what Michael Dunn wonders. He's an expert on the auto industry in China. Dunn calls China's $1 billion of subsidies a drop in the ocean for the auto industry. He says there's no doubt auto parts workers are losing jobs to China, but
how many of these exports from China are actually U.S. companies based in China exporting back to the U.S.?
Dunn's sure there are some, but he says that's an issue President Obama may want to avoid on his trip through Ohio today. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmidt for Marketplace.
And while we're talking about China, the country is about to make its biggest ever bank acquisition abroad. That is according to the Financial Times, which says China could spend as much as $15 billion buying a bank, some bank, we don't know yet, in Europe. Marketplace's Stephen Beard talked earlier today with my Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson. And here's Jeremy.
So this would be the biggest bank acquisition abroad, says the Financial Times. How invested are the Chinese in foreign banks?
Well, their biggest banking acquisition to date is a 20% stake of South Africa's Standard Bank. Here in Europe, and this is where they're looking for a bank, they've been more interested in other sectors to date. I mean, they bought a Norwegian high-tech manufacturer for $2 billion. They bought 7% of the French tourism company Club Med, 75% of a luxury Italian yacht maker, and they leased a major chunk of the Port of Piraeus in Athens. This is not so far huge, but this Chinese investment in Europe is gathering pace and at a faster rate than in the US. There's one estimate that by the year 2020, Chinese companies could own $500 trillion worth of European assets.
Now, here in the U.S., of course, there are sometimes some concerns, a little bit of anxiety about big Chinese purchases of U.S. firms. How do these things go over in Europe?
Well, there is some anxiety in some quarters here, but generally, according to Daniel Gross of the Center for European Policy Studies, there's less anxiety here than in the U.S.
In Europe, there's much less concern about strategic and military issues. And therefore, overall, there's a wary welcome for Chinese foreign direct investment. A little bit wary, but a welcome nevertheless.
But for a really wholehearted, unwary welcome, the Chinese can always look at the UK. The UK, Jeremy, as you know, will sell anything to anybody. It's one of the most open economies in the world. They welcome the Chinese telecom manufacturer Huawei with open arms, while there's been a lot of disquiet in the US about cyber espionage on that score. The UK does have some large banks for sale, too. The government has bailed out two of them, RBS and Lloyds, and would no doubt like to be shot of them, but the Chinese might be a bit wary of the UK. China bought a big chunk of Barclays, and they're still nursing a large paper loss on that deal.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks a lot.
The Democrats made a lot of noise at their convention about saving the auto industry and the success of the bailout. Well, according to a piece in this morning's Wall Street Journal, the U.S. Treasury's welcome at General Motors is wearing a little thin. GM is reportedly pushing for the government to sell most or all of its remaining stake, currently about a quarter of the company. But the Obama administration seems to be in no hurry to exit. For more, I've got Dave Sullivan here. He's an analyst with Auto Pacific. Dave, how are you?
Terrific. Terrific. Thank you for having me.
So for GM's part, why is it so important to them that they get the government out?
There's a few things that they have on their plate right now. One, they've been saddled with the name Government Motors, and there's a lot of people who are of the thinking that because the government bailed them out, that they don't want to do business with them. They don't want to purchase their vehicles, and they're taking their business elsewhere. And also, GM feels that possibly this could be hurting them in acquiring new talent within the company because they have restrictions on compensation. And that is possibly not making them competitive with attracting the best talent in the industry to help turn the company around. So those are two of the big reasons why they would like the government to get out right now of the ownership circle.
What do you make of this stigma thing? I mean, does somebody really, you know, get in the showroom but think, oh, I don't know, Government Motors, I like this car, but maybe not?
You know, when I go to the coasts, I don't really feel that type of attitude. It's still of the, do I want to buy an American car feeling on the coasts. Well, as you go further into the country, you get that more of a political riff of Government Motors. Some people have forgotten about it, and I don't think really too many people still think about the ownership, who owns the actual company, whether it be the government, the UAW, or shareholders.
For the U.S. Treasury, why do you think they would want to hang on to some stake in GM?
Well, they have a lot at stake in the company, because if they were to sell, they would lose billions of dollars right now. The GM stock price has fallen quite a bit from its initial public offering, and any sale that GM would have right now of their stock, or if they were to buy it back from the Treasury would take a tremendous loss. So I think it would not be in the Treasury or the taxpayers' best interest right now to have a sale. You know, I think they're looking to minimize their losses. There's been some political backlash, you know, about banks and already about bailing out GM and Chrysler. And I think it would not be in the best interest of the Treasury or the administration to sell right now, just because of the it would be a headline on how much of a loss they'd take. They could really minimize that if they were to wait for the stock price to go up.
Dave Sullivan with Auto Pacific. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
No school again today in Chicago. The teacher's strike goes on. Teacher evaluation is the major issue. Healthcare, though, is another sticking point. Teachers want the city to freeze prices on their insurance premiums. The city says, okay, but the teachers have to sign on to a wellness program. Marketplace's Eve Tro has more on what those programs are and how they work.
Employers really want to spend less on employee health care. One of the best ways to do that is crazy obvious.
For people to be healthier.
That's Helen Darling with the National Business Group on Health. She says wellness programs involve employers directly in workers' health. If you have a health risk,
inactivity, smoking, overweight, things like that,
a wellness plan might pay you to quit smoking or lose weight and cover counseling or a gym membership.
We spend a lot of time trying to figure out what will in fact work, what will click with people.
At Healthways, a wellness plan company, sales director Brad Kirkpatrick says plans must balance better health with productivity. A call center, say, wants workers at their desks as much as possible, so they might pay for nurses to visit the office.
Get their blood, their weight, get some vital information without them having to leave the building.
Healthways runs the wellness plan for the city of Chicago. It's expected to save the city $20 million in health care costs this year. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally, call it efficiency, call it multitasking, or just call it love. When Larry Austin headed to the courthouse in Oklahoma City the other day, he had a few things to get done, according to the local newspaper, The Oklahoman. First, he had to apply for a marriage license, and his girlfriend, Dusty, she was along for the trip. Second task, plead guilty to a firearms charge. Third, get sentenced for said firearms charge. 4 years in prison, as it turned out. Fourth, get married by the same judge who had just sentenced him. No word on what the bride wore, but the groom wore orange. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us.
Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.